Coming to you live from the tropical north coast of Akron, Ohio, it's the War of the Shores. West Coast versus Gulf Coast. Not since the war-torn Battle of 1812 have two colossal titans been embroiled in a fight for ultimate supremacy on the crystal blue waters of the mighty Lake Erie. Witness the tidal wave of titans. Experience the undertow of the undefeated. This is Last Movie Standing, Beach Brawl!
Again, this is an audio format, so this will mean nothing to you unless I maybe put one track in one speaker, one track in the other, but that's not going to happen. So this will make no sense, but I'm going to say it anyways. On my right, all of his tables may be crooked, but his takes are straight fire. He's a student of pop culture, but plans on taking his opponent to school today. He's the Iron Man of Indie Podcast. He is Mr. Robert Yanez Jr.
I just wanted to quickly point out before we get started, last time I was on, we ended up selecting Saving Private Ryan, and I just want to say, we all saw how that did when it came to Last Movie Standing.
Yes.
And in the vault, so that's, just throwing that out there ahead of time.
That's a very good point, Robert. You are going into this as basically last season's winner?
Kind of, yeah. I helped nudge that one through the door ahead of Rocky.
Which is just devastating to, I think, everybody. So, and you're showing up with a very delicious handlebar mustache. It's very Triple H circa 2004.
I will take it.
It's also Tony Stark adjacent, ironically. Now, to my left, which again means absolutely nothing, from the stages of High School Musicals to the hallowed grounds of Hollywood, this man has heritage. He's the Spielberg of home videos, the Lucas of high school English projects, a director of short films who plans on making short work of his opponent. He's the Del Close of my childhood. He is Jake Thomas!
Hey, I'm really impressed if your listeners are familiar with Del Close. That's a deep cut.
They are. We just spent I just spent a considerable amount of time earlier this year talking about Del Close with Dr. Woofula, of all people, of YouTube fame. So, yeah.
Excellent.
You missed your point. Well, I missed the point, Jake. When you said that, I should have said yes and, but I...
And yes and.
I messed up. I'm sorry.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm very, very good. If you're the first time a listener to Last Movie Standing, we have a season where we start with roughly 25 to 30 films, and we whittle our way down week by week with other film critics, filmmakers, film personalities, weremen, monsters, ghouls and ghosts and goblins, and whoever else would just come on. And we whittle our way down week by week to what our guest thinks is the best and what I think are the best. Sometimes those overlap, sometimes they don't. Those comprise the guest list and the short list, which is my list. On the guest list this season, we start off with episode 100, Scott Weinberg, film critic, producer, writer, podcaster. His current show is Science versus Fiction. And of the best movies of the 1980s, of the movies we love from that decade, the movies everybody talks about, he chose RoboCop. Then we had D.W. Lumber from NostalgiaCast. We went from the top of the 80s to the dresser drawers of the 80s, for the junk drawer of the 80s, rifling through, trying to figure out some forgotten films of the 80s, movies that people maybe have heard of but have never seen, maybe saw but thought were a fever dream, or maybe never saw at all, never even heard of. And he chose The Boy Who Could Fly, which I'm going to be interested to hear what you two gentlemen have to say about that one. And then there was Paul from The Countdown. He is our own Megazord in resident. I blow my whistle. He arises from the South Pacific, makes his way to land. He kaijus his way to sunny tropical Akron, Ohio. He is an icon here. He chose The Brood from our Killer Kids episode. And then Claire, who's a film critic over at CineChat Online, CRP writes, and has her own podcast, which she hosts with another lovely lady, the W-Rated Podcast, where they only watch terrible films. I brought her on, and she had the very controversial take of selecting American Beauty as the best of that week. And then we had the ineffable, the effervescent M of Verbal Diorama. She showed up on the show, and she chose maybe the most formative movie of Robert's life, The Matrix. He waxes poetic about it on Twitter quite frequently, so it's only fitting we'd have you here. Now, when I went through my short list, I chose some different movies this time. I chose Ghostbusters from the 1980s, which, you know, is about as formative as it could get for me. Then I chose a movie that no one's ever seen, but I had a fever dream of once from my childhood, called Electric Dreams. Where I saw it, I did not know, but I had seen it, at least in snippets, when I was a child. It might have been on a VHS that my dad had dubbed. I chose from Killer Kids, The Village of the Damned, the original 1960. Not that horrible, horrible John Carpenter movie that we will never speak of. Until a little bit later this year, potentially. And then I chose American Beauty as well, and I did that with a lot of shame and regret. It's one of those things I wish I could erase from my memory, but of that week, it was the best. And then I also chose The Matrix because I like Robert, and if I didn't choose it, I know I would break his heart. And he's a sweet guy. He's just, that's Robert's a sweetheart. So I chose The Matrix as well. It was the defining movie of 14-year-old film nerds everywhere. So that's the guest list. That's the short list. We have decided beforehand who's going to do what. Robert, you will be defending. As the champion of our guests, you will be the champion of the guest list. Jake, as the champion of my childhood, you will be defending me and defending the short list. For those that don't know, Jake and I grew up together. And for probably the most important window of time in an adolescent's youth, Jake was one of my friends, one of my very best friends, and he was by far my best movie friend. So I'm calling in the heavy hitter here to defend my list this time. He knows what these movies mean to me, and if he fails me, then really he's failed our childhood. No pressure, Jake. No pressure.
No pressure. Well, I mean, all the filmmakers who made the favorite movies of our childhood have already failed it.
That's a really great point. I'm just saying
either it's like, let's watch this. Well, I don't know. The sequel wasn't that great, or that filmmaker turned out to be a real scuzz.
Very true. I'm just saying that if you choose a movie from my childhood and the binge lords eliminate it from cinematic history, then our childhood memories together are eliminated. And then one day I'll see you and we won't even know who we are. It'll be a time cop situation where we'll look at each other. It'll be like that vague memory of, I think I used to know you, but it'll be all erased.
Understood. The stakes are high.
All of your old mini VHS tapes with Kermit the Frog puppetry will suddenly vanish from existence. And that would be a loss, not just for us personally, but really for the whole world, I think.
That's right.
The world needs our embarrassing videos, Jake. There's a lot on the line here, my friend.
Kids, before YouTube, you could hide the stuff that you made because no one outside of your close circle of friends who had access to a VCR would ever see it.
This is true.
It's great.
This is
true. And all the kids are now like, what's a VCR?
Kids.
Yeah, and a lot of the kids might be going, what's a YouTube? Because they're like TikTok.
yeah, that's true.
That's a good point. It's true.
Yeah, back before TikTok, you didn't get sponsorships for putting out embarrassing content. You didn't get to live in a you didn't live in a hype house mansion. You went to Jake Thomas's parents' garage and his trampoline in the backyard. Were you?
You got a stern talking to from your embarrassing videos.
Where you injured your knee and have problems with it well into your 30s. A lot of the weird stunts we did in your backyard are just now registering in my body, Jake. So those are my those are my memories. Mm-hmm. And then Robert, for you, your childhood is on the line a little bit, right? If let's say it comes down to one of these movies that's very significant to you, if it doesn't make it through, do you cease to exist? Does Crooked Table just vanish?
Oh, that's a good point. Actually, a lot of these movies were pivotal to me. The Matrix, above all, as you were saying, But yeah, it's going to be a tough call no matter what happens. I think it's good. I think Jake and I are both going to find ourselves feeling a little conflicted in making some of these arguments for or against these movies that were kind of formative for, you know, generations of moviegoers.
Yes. And here's the deal. You eliminated Rocky from existence. I know you say you put Saving Private Ryan and you helped nudge it into the vault. But what you really did was you really eliminated the greatest sports franchise and the greatest protagonist in film history, who has a 50-year track record at this point almost of great storytelling. So I
have no memory of this, Jason. I don't know what you're talking about.
I really like you, Robert. I owe you great personal debts in the podcast and personal space of my life. But I'd be a liar.
Maybe
if I didn't say that I've got a vendetta against you, sir. That's why I've brought in this ringer. I didn't bring in a film critic. I brought in a filmmaker, and I think he's going to make short work of you, sir. I am biased, and I want to see this man, Jake Thomas, whoop your ass right here on Last Movie Standing.
So I hope the listeners heard that if that's the way this goes, everything was fixed from the beginning, right? We have that on the record. That's staying in.
That's what he said, yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
Because that's what he said, yeah.
Little hand behind the curtain.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
I don't vote on these because the exclusive place to vote on our poll is on Twitter at Binge Movies. You will decide, binge lords and listeners, which film is most worthy of preservation. When this episode drops, we're going to put up a poll. It'll be up for a couple of days only on Twitter. You've got to vote there. You vote, you decide, whatever that is goes into the vault. So I may be biased, I may have a vendetta, but I don't have voting power here, right? So I can't, I'm not going to be on Twitter drumming up for Jake. I'm just simply going to say, here's the poll, the people vote, you make final cut, you choose Last Movie Standing. So as biased as I am, I'm fine putting the table because I don't think it's going to affect the outcome.
Fair enough.
I propose we could salve that by doing our own Saving Private Ryan where Tom Hanks goes to save Rocky.
You're the filmmaker, Jake. You write the script.
Yeah, because he's like, earned this. He's like, I'll ring the bell.
It's been 25 years since I've made an embarrassing movie. You fly us out to California from Akron, Ohio, and I will dress up as Rocky, and we will embarrass ourselves, and we'll put it on TikTok. It'll be the first feature-length fan film released in 20-second snippets on TikTok.
Brought to you by HelloFresh, probably.
And here's the thing that people don't know about Jake. He's got light feet. That man can shuffle. So he can also choreograph some dances in the movie. So we could do HelloFresh sponsored Saving Private Rocky, where
Saving Private Rocky the musical, it sounds
the musical,
like.
Or they were gonna do some TikTok dances as damn near 40-year-old men. It'll be the rage with all the kids. The kids will love it.
This sounds amazing.
All right. Well, without much further ado, I think it's time that we start getting into it. So let's send it over to Paul from the countdown to explain the rules of Last Movie Standing.
The rules of Last Movie Standing. Competitors have been randomly assigned either the guest list or Jason's shortlist before the episode. The winner of the opening Dunn/Deloise coin flip will choose between two advantages, first pick or first word/last word. First pick means they get first choice of movie from their list, giving them the advantage of choosing the film they think is most likely to win. First word/last word gives the advantage of hearing their competitor's final argument and gets the last word to the audience. Last Movie Standing is a 4-round snake debate. Round 1, opening arguments of 90 seconds. The person with the first word is given 90 seconds to make their uninterrupted case for their film. Then their opponent makes their case for their film. In round 2, rebuttals take place, also over 90 seconds. The person with the first pick is given 90 seconds to critique their opponent's argument. then their opponent does the same. Round 3, cross-examinations, also 90 seconds. The person with first word will be given 90 seconds to directly question their opponent. The opponent can respond during this time. Then their opponent has 90 seconds to do the same. Round 4, closing arguments, this time just 60 seconds long. The person with the first pick will be given 60 uninterrupted seconds to make their appeal directly to the audience for their vote on the basis of their movie's worthiness and the opposing movie's lack thereof. The person with last word will conclude with the same.
Yes, those are the rules of Last Movie Standing. Now it's time for a little something we like to call First Cut. Robert, let's start with you. You are the guest. You feel like the die is cast against you unfairly, so we'll start with you. What are the movies off of the guest list that you are getting rid of straight off the top?
So the first movie that the People's Champion is cutting from the list is is the Boy Who Could Fly. We're looking at the vaults. We're looking at these classic movies that are in there. And the first ones that were cut were the ones that I've literally never heard of. As good as they are, clearly their impact on cinema in general is not really quite up to that level. I think there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's very sweet, very sentimental. You know, we get Wonder Years, Fred Savage wandering around, and Mrs. McLean doing her thing. And, you know, there is a boy who can fly, so it lives up to that title.
Yes.
So, fair enough, I guess. I guess you get what you
pay
for.
Not only that, but he takes the girl along with him. So
it's true.
Yeah.
Exactly. Guess, kind of a Peter Pan-esque story, which I appreciate as someone who obviously grew up with
Here's the thing,
Peter
Robert,
Pan in various forms.
I don't remember the dad in Peter Pan killing himself, though.
That's true.
I don't remember Wendy's brothers soaking neighborhood bullies with their own urine in a squirt gun. I don't remember that either.
So you're saying they improved upon Peter Pan?
I'm saying Fred Savage made two movies in the 80s that involved having people either drink or be covered
ingest.
In urine.
Yeah, Little Monsters reference.
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
it.
He pissed in the pickle jar.
Which was like this, what, the same year? Or like right around the same time?
Pretty close. What I'm
Fred
saying
Savage
is
was getting that money.
The 80s were a hell of a time. Yeah. We're going to make the guy who played the original Michael Myers is going to become a director, and he's going to make a movie about a boy with autism where somehow autism gives him the superpower of flight. And we were like, yeah, we accept that. That's possible. Yeah. If you're neuroatypical, you must be able to fly. Sure. Why not? It's the 80s.
Exactly. Differently abled.
Yeah. Very differently abled. Sure. I understand the cut. What's next on the list? What else are you getting rid of? What else is shit?
that's a little harsh, but
David Cronenberg's The Robert. Hey, those are your words, Robert, not mine.
I didn't say, hey. Do you see that, ladies and gentlemen, do you hear the narrative that he's trying to formulate? We're all being gaslit live on the air.
What he said was Nick Castle is shit. He doesn't deserve his career. That's what I heard.
Oh, wow. Now all the Halloween diehards are going to come after me.
I know, yeah. The Shape of
Sunny. You know what day of the year they're coming for you.
Exactly.
That's right.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's going to be like The Purge at my house.
Yeah. What's next? What else? What else should not have ever been made?
Next, we're doing David Cronenberg's The Brood, which is another movie that I may have heard of, but I'd never seen and was not really familiar with anything, so went in completely blind. I think that the film has a lot of interesting things to say about divorce and trauma, and obviously you got the Cronenberg kind of signature body horror going on in there, mm-hmm. and some lovely overacting and some really gruesome effects towards the end. So I appreciated that, and I did enjoy the way that the sort of haunting ending that it leaves viewers with. And kind of the lasting ramifications of that family unit, I guess, and how that sort of falls apart. You get the genderless, like, psychic dwarves, or I don't even know how to describe them exactly.
I think
that
you
just
did it
manifest themselves. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you have the birthing scene towards the end, which is exactly what you expect when you go for a Cronenberg movie. You're like, I'm going to be grossed out. There's going to be fluids. Something's gonna happen that's gonna leave me disturbed and scar my psyche forever.
Yeah.
And I think you get that with this, and there's a lot of subtext that elevates the movie, but ultimately, again, with the competition, it didn't really stand much of a chance.
There's a third creepy element you've left out, which is young-ish Oliver Reed in a gi, reenacting a boy's trauma with a 60-year-old infantilized man begging him to be his daddy.
That may have been one of the more disturbing
scenes of the entire movie.
It starts strong and it ends strong.
Yeah.
And in the middle, it's kind of a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have those two sequences that kind of bookend the movie. And I think that helps kind of kick it up a notch.
What's the last thing you're getting rid of?
So last time I was on, we did obviously the highest grossing movies in 1998. One of them was A Bug's Life. And I made a crack about an oppressive Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
And I think when you're taking into account the something to put in the vault, you have to consider its legacy, its timelessness. And a movie where Kevin Spacey essentially plays a pedophile, not exactly aging well in 2021. 20 years ago, you know, things were different, I guess. So we were all like you said earlier, we gave things a free pass. We're like, sure, that sounds about right. And it fit the kind of the theme of that year with Fight Club, with The Matrix, with movies like Office Space, where you had like kind of middle America, suburban family, suburban like office worker wanting to break out of the norm, out of the routine. And so you get some dark comedy of Kevin Spacey throwing dishes and, and, you know, buying himself expensive cars and all that stuff. But when it comes right down to it, it has an even ickier feeling now than it did then. It did win Best Picture, and, you know, objectively, there are things about it that work. You know, Kevin Spacey's performance is strong, but the material doesn't exactly, slip effortlessly into the vault at this point. So you know, the flying bag and how that you can either get into that and you're like, I see what the movie's trying to say, or you can, like, mock it and they did the whole gag in Not Another Teen Movie with that.
Yes.
The most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So it's you know, I feel slightly conflicted about kicking it out because ultimately I think there is some merit to the movie, but overall it's gotten tainted over the years, so it's not making it further.
Only in the late 90s would you present middle class malaise as a real societal problem and make your central protagonist a 45-year-old menacing white male whose heroic moment where he comes to himself is smashing dinner plates and screaming at his family, and we're supposed to be like, yeah, I'm on this guy's side.
Or the big turning point for him is and then later on we're supposed to be find it really moving when he decides, you know what, maybe I don't want to have sex with the underage teenage girl, the friend of my daughter's, because she's not as promiscuous as she thought I was. Right. And so she's like, well, I don't want to take her virginity. If she's like giving it away, then maybe I'll take some. But otherwise, not interested. And that's supposed to be like a huge epiphany for that character.
Wrong-headed. It's eliminated. At least from Robert. Jake, how about you? Let's go to your bottom three. What are you getting rid of right away?
Ooh, my bottom three. The first one I'm going to eliminate is the black and white horror thriller classic from 1960, Village of the Damned. Not because I didn't find it entertaining. I think this opening of this movie, for those who haven't seen it, in which an entire town goes comatose for several hours, unexplained, is one of the most interesting openings I've ever seen in a film. And the mysteries keep mounting from there as the town reawakens, and months later, suddenly all the women are pregnant, and then they birth these strange, blonde, alien children. Maybe aliens, they never really say. They don't have to. It's almost like a metaphor for the threat of hive mind Hitler youth that I'm sure was still on England's mind 15 years after the end of World War II. However, the second half of the movie suffers a little bit, as does the climax, because the big action movie moment at the end where George Sanders defeats the bad guys, he does it by thinking of a brick wall. And so,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen worse third acts. I've seen better ones. Also, George Sanders' presence is kind of surprising in this. He's obviously better than the material, but he's, I don't know. It's a lot of people talking in rooms, and so if you like that, then you'll love this movie.
You know, and then nuking or at least bombing, going on other countries, and how, you know, primitive Inuit savages have murdered their own children, and maybe we should murder these kids now before it's too late.
That brings up a really good point, because yeah, in the third act they're talking about what the other governments have done to the villages, mm-hmm. that have had hive mind kids, yeah. suddenly pop up, and it's like, oh, that sounds interesting, can we cut to that?
Nope. Yeah.
Like, there's a war going on now. They bombed it. Like, ooh. Oh no, we're still here. Okay, all right, we're still in the drawing room. All right.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Yeah. All right, what else is on? What else are you getting rid of? What else is on your list?
The other one on the list we'll eliminate off the bat. Me and Robert are on the same page where American Beauty has wrinkled heavily and aged like a banana in this day and age. Now, with, like, interestingly enough, like you said, the malaise of upper middle class America as a serious problem, that really does belong to the era in which it was made, you know, pre-9/11, pre-housing crisis crash, pre-opioid epidemic, all these other things that have taken place in the middle America since then. It'd be interesting if you had filmmakers now possibly attempt to do a Fargo and maybe do a series based on this movie with different characters, a different cast, obviously, but kind of just capturing the same... some of the stuff that might be worth examining as far as, like, looking for the spiritual underpinnings of what is a materialistic world, essentially. But, I mean, it's almost like, well, you know, if you're doing that, then maybe you're just updating it for the generation now, and maybe what you get is euphoria. So maybe it's not necessary to do that kind of thing. But it's almost kind of like a forerunner. But, yeah, you don't really see movies like this where it's all characters and all just kind of like, you know, clashing personalities, scenes like that. It's like, this is basically what TV has become on streaming.
That's a
and
very
they've actually,
point.
Quite honestly, because of the longer format, TV can do it better. So the movie itself kind of suffers because of, one, the casting, two, the general content, like you said, of the third act being like, oh, what a sweet guy. He didn't have sex with the virgin. Good guy. It's like, oh, yeah.
Poor okay. dude, he got a bad rap.
Like, that's a given, yeah. Just like you should.
You say that's a given, but apparently not. Apparently not.
Apparently not.
Okay, what's your last elimination?
My last elimination, and this really breaks my heart to knock this off the list, because I had never heard of this movie before watching it. Got to see it for free. And while the story is silly, the filmmaking is absolutely brilliant, breathtaking, always clever, one of the most visually inventive movies I've ever seen, and that is Electric Dreams, the story of an architect whose computer becomes sentient and falls in love with the girl next door and helps him woo her, and then they become romantic rivals. That sounds silly, but I mean, in the first 5-10 minutes alone, this is some of the most efficient, fast-paced movie making that really sets up things cleverly. Like when he sits down in the airport and this woman starts asking him questions about himself, like, what is your name? What do you do for a living? And he starts answering her, and then you realize that she's listening to an Audible, basically learning how to speak English track, and she's been reciting those out loud, and then he gets all awkward. It's like, oh my gosh, you just told us those basic facts about him, but also showed us how awkward he is with women in general and social situations because of that. And that's just one of the small things, and that takes place over the course of 10 seconds, and then it's off to the next brilliant thing. But it's less of a movie and more of just like this, like people should watch this just to see how you can convey information in different ways and unspool things out in the story. It veers a little bit in the second half where it's like kind of meanders here and there and maybe has one too many montages, but it's still really amazing. So I'm sad to take it off. Because it's a movie that has not one, not two, but three theme songs that have the title in it, which is really impressive. I don't think they've done that since a Turtles movie or something.
Well, speaking of a Turtles movie, this guy would go on to direct the 1990s Turtle movie. But before this movie and before the Turtles movie, he directed the Aha classic video for Take On Me. So when you're thinking about great visual storytelling or evocative visuals or things that have lasted 40 some years as far as like that strike an image in your mind, this guy is one of those people, and I'm surprised he didn't go on to have a bigger directorial career. I think he's made a handful of movies, worked in television, but to me it was like he's obviously was a very talented filmmaker, and he's maximizing his minutes in this film.
And he's setting up a smart home before they exist, because right? He's giving control of his appliances,
yes,
his home security, everything to the computer.
Yeah. And that computer is Bud Cort from Harold and Maude fame. And so you're like, if you ever wanted to see what the kid from Harold and Maude would grow up to do, he grew up to become a sexual computer, a very highly horny, thirsty computer.
One technical thing that I will say is a little distracting in the movie that kind of knocks it down a few pegs is the fact that it seems like the microphone may have broke on their on their set in a lot of scenes, and it's like a lot of the movie is done with re-recording the dialogues, automated dialogue replacement, ADR, and you can kind of tell because it just doesn't sound like their voices are coming from the same environment that they're standing in, like they're outside and it sounds like they're inside, and that can be a little distracting if it's overdone.
See, that's why you bring on a filmmaker, and that's why you bring on someone who is a film obsessive like Robert Yanez Jr. These two guys know their shit and are going to be dropping knowledge on you, but now it's time for them to start dropping bombs on each other. We're going to see who wins Last Movie Standing. It is, of course, a snake debate format. So we start with a coin flip. Robert, I've already said that the cards are stacked against you, that I am Team JT all the way. That I am actively rooting against you. I'm going to give to you, Robert, the ability to call Dunn or DeLuise. We don't have heads or tails here. We refer to our patron saints here at Binge Movies. The first patron saint of all is Milt Anglin himself, the dad from Transformers, the guy from Veep, Kevin Dunn. He, of course, is going to be heads, so you can call Dunn, or you can call DeLuise, the star of Going Bananas, a Cannon Films classic where Menachem Golan wanted to cast a real monkey, and he did, but it bit the boy, and then he asked her secretary if she'd fuck the monkey, and it was whole. Do you know this story, Robert?
I don't think so.
1 hour later.
So, are you ready, sir?
I am.
All right. I'm going to flip it. Call it.
DeLuise.
It's done! You lose the coin toss. That means, Jake, you either get first pick, you get to pick the movie you want to defend, or you get first word, last word, where you get to make your opening argument uninterrupted straight to our audience, and you get to make our closing statement having heard all of Robert's arguments.
I'm going to go with first pick.
Okay, all right. All right. The highly unpredictable Jake Thomas is going to go with first pick. So, Jake, what is the first, what's the movie you are selecting? You are down to Ghostbusters and The Matrix. So, what's the next one you're eliminating, and what's the movie you're going to be picking?
Oh, two great films that have stood the test of time with audiences here at home and worldwide. But when it comes right down to it, I'm going to go with the power of a team over the power of the one, and elevate Ghostbusters to be preserved in the vault.
That's my
forever
boy!
In all time.
Yeah, Jake! Yeah!
So, Jason, what would you have done if he had picked The Matrix? Would it have been like, you're dead to me, Jake, end of podcast.
Well, it means a lot to have Jake back in my life, so no. But I probably would just hit stop record and you guys wouldn't know and this episode would never come out.
Like, and Ghostbusters was inducted into the vault.
Due to technical
undisputed.
Due to technical difficulties. But yeah, Ghostbusters just gets an automatic buy into the vault. But here, truthfully, it's equally as tough for me because I love both these movies. They made my list, right? They appear on my short list. So, all right, Robert. That means you are left between RoboCop and The Matrix, and you're going to get first word. You get to make opening arguments and the closing argument. You get to hear every last thing that Jake Thomas is going to say about Ghostbusters. So that's your advantage. Which movie are you going to pick? They're both weird tech horror movies that have some social commentary in there. One's slightly more philosophical, and one is a very blatant ripoff of the Gospels, while the other is a very blatant ripoff of Ghost in the Shell. Are you going to go with the New Testament, or are you going to go with Japanimation?
Well, I feel like you diminished both my choices just there. So I feel like now that the odds are even higher stacked against me. But regardless, I am going to go with The Matrix.
All right.
Well, we'll find out. You'll find out why.
You get opening argument, which means you are going to get 90 seconds uninterrupted to make your opening argument, make your opening case.
Let's do it.
All right, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, so we were kind of alluding to this earlier. The Matrix is a hugely pivotal movie for me personally. I was in high school when this came out, and this is the movie that made me a cinephile. And I feel like it has had a similar effect on a whole generation of people. It's become hugely inspiring to people wanting to be interested in the entertainment world and in film specifically. It encapsulates so much of what cinema can be, and it's impossible to view the last 22 years of cinema without considering The Matrix and the impact it's had on action, on sci-fi, on all of these different genres, and how it's steered the conversation as far as visual effects are concerned, as far as imbuing themes in your movie. You have the most iconic performance, I would say, from Keanu Reeves, probably his best known character. Arguably, John Wick is kind of coming for that title, I guess. But there's 5 iconic performances in here with the 3 leads, with Joe Pantoliano, Joey Pants, and with Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith. You have like constant barrage of memorable lines, sequences, things that have been burned into the brains of cinephiles everywhere. And, you know, I saw this a couple years ago for the 20th anniversary re-release, and it still plays as strongly as it does today, even though it touches on a lot of the sort of middle-class malaise that we were talking about with American Beauty. It kind of transcends that and becomes timeless in its own way. And I think for that reason alone, it deserves to be put into the vault alongside other movies like it.
Okay, we'll get right down to the wire. Make some notes here. What I heard was that you forfeited and conceded and you just wanted to put Ghostbusters in the vault. Is that what I heard?
No, you great. Would, Jason. You would.
great opening argument there. Okay. Jake, are you ready, sir, for your uninterrupted opening argument?
All set.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, go, sir.
Picking up or dropping off. He slimed me. There's something strange in the neighborhood. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters. These are small, timeless, amazing nuggets of dialogue compared to, you know, very long expository monologues in The Matrix of plot. But take what you have here is a perfect action movie, a perfect comedy movie, a perfect supernatural fantasy, and how that becomes a seed for everything that has flourished in those genres within the last almost 40 years now, if you can believe it or not, since this movie was released. If you look at the careers of stars like Ryan Reynolds and Robert Downey Jr., the reason that they can look at the camera and throw a quip while all this stuff is happening around them is very much directly related to Bill Murray as Peter Venkman, who could do it better than anyone. You had Harold Ramis, you had Dan Aykroyd, Rick Moranis, Sigourney Weaver, all at the top of their game, delivering very genuine performances that also elevated the comedy because they were so earnest at times, save for Bill Murray doing his like breaking the ice. You got a great collaboration between Dan Aykroyd, who had a very different idea at first, bringing it with writers who then crafted it into something that was much more grounded and relatable. It's a wonderful movie that you can pop in any time that always makes you glad you watched it. So Ghostbusters should go into the vault.
Another strong opening performance. Robert coming with some Hulk Hogan level passion, Jake coming with a more Jake the Snake, steely eye, looking straight down the barrel of the camera. If you could have seen that, calm, cool, collected. He's a stone cold killer, but Robert just coming from the heart, man. This is interesting. This is interesting dynamic between you two. They say styles make fights. And I see some styles clashing here in the best way possible, which is why you guys are perfect for this and why everybody should go support your endeavors elsewhere. But I'm going to leave my commentary on that round for a little later episode when I break this down round by round. Until then, it's time to get into our rebuttals, which means due to the snake format, Jake, you're going to go first. You're going to get an additional 90 seconds to rebut the opening argument from our dear friend, RYJ. Are you ready?
I am set.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, go.
When you look at the influence of a movie like The Matrix, you get a lot of stylistic choices that kind of became hot trends within the following 3 to 4 years, and sadly, quickly, if you really look at it, kind of burned out by the time the sequels rolled around in 2003. Bullet time, some of the styles, some of the more ballet kind of action sequences. Yes, that was very big at that time, but then everyone started ripping off Bullet Time, spoofing it, doing aspects of it that were similar in, you know, an ultraviolet or, you know, a Resident Evil type of slow-mo speed-up. Even some of Zack Snyder's earlier stuff and even some of the recent stuff kind of owes a lot to that. But it's not, that stuff's kind of, you know, maybe laughed at a little bit nowadays because it became so prevalent and then died out so quickly. Whereas I would say a lot of the action genre, a lot of that kind of owes more to your shaky cam, Paul Greengrass, grounded realism, gritty look that really came about thanks to the Bourne movies, Batman and the Bond reboots that took place. Along with, like, you know, the themes, yes, it kind of belongs in its era because you have a person who's kind of bored with his office job and works as a hacker and, yeah, I mean, there's other things to be, there's other themes to explore there as far as that goes. Ultimately, what The Matrix gives us is a really good sophomore effort from some talented filmmakers that the promise didn't peter out as much.
Robert, are you ready?
I am.
You get to rebut the rebut. Okay, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Go, sir.
So you mentioned Ghostbusters as a pinnacle, like as how it transcended or how it crystallized action comedy. And really, are we really putting the action in Ghostbusters against the action in The Matrix? Is that what's happening right now? We're putting the Ghostbusters works as a comedy. As an action movie, it's debatable. They stand and they point beams at stuff. Pretty much. So, I mean, I don't know if I would emphasize the action side of it. Murray's performance, yes, is iconic, but it's also a guy who doesn't want to be on screen, basically spending the whole movie being like, I don't want to be here. Why are we doing this? And then finally giving in so he can get his paycheck. And everyone in the movie, arguably a lot of the leads, certainly the other three main cast members, this is kind of the height of their careers. Dan Aykroyd is still now trying to make a Ghostbusters shared universe because he's like desperate to try and revive this franchise and make something happen. Murray is the one that has really kind of continued on getting Oscar nominated, things like that. Then you have the fan base that has now gotten toxic where you try and do a movie with this franchise with women and they go apeshit. And it's been tainted by Ghostbusters 2, by the people that hate Ghostbusters Answer the Call, to the point that Ghostbusters Afterlife is coming out, and a lot of people, myself included, are like, should we just leave it alone now? I feel like it's too late. Then you have more, I'm out of time. I'll get back to it. I have more. We'll get back to it when it comes.
And another thing.
Yeah.
I certainly could have a rebuttal to that rebuttal, but I think you made some excellent points, Robert. I will do my best to be quiet here, and I'm just going to leave it to the cold, calculated mind of a Hollywood, just a cold-hearted, Son of a bitch. I will say this, though. I will say this, Robert. In defense, you said this was the peak of some people's career. I want you to put some respect in the name of Ernie Hudson. That's all I'm going to say. If you want to trash Dan Aykroyd, you trash him all day long.
Well, I specifically called out Dan Aykroyd, to be fair. I didn't go out after anybody. I know Moranis has stuff after this.
Yeah, you put some respect on his name.
Absolutely.
Right? He's a friend of this show, Ernie Hudson is. Robert, you say you have more to say. You have an additional 90 seconds, but this time it's not going to, can't be uninterrupted. You get to take it to Jake personally during round three cross-examinations. Some of these questions you have, some of these personal attacks on Dan Aykroyd, you can now direct them to Jake. And I would say maybe veer away from his penis nose and nothing but trouble. That does not pertain to what we're talking about here today. So try to keep it in a Ghostbusters lane, if you will, during the cross-examination. Maybe not his very bad British accent in Temple of Doom. Maybe don't bring that up. Maybe don't bring up Spies Like Us or really anything else the man's ever done, right? Just
don't bring up Academy Award winning Driving Miss Daisy with Dan Aykroyd.
Please don't bring that. Yeah, that's this. I have nothing against Dan Aykroyd, but Jessica Tandy, I got a deep, dark, checkered past with Jessica Tandy. May she burn in hell. Okay, are you ready?
I feel like we need to hear the story off mic now.
No, we don't. Let's just say the estate of Jessica Tandy and I have signed what's known as an NDA in the biz. You got 90 seconds here, starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
So Jake, let me ask you, where is the, again, this is the 80s, so
Robert,
this is the 80s, so this is sort of a loaded question already, but where is the representation in this movie? Like, where are the women? Where are the, you know, where are the people of color? We get Ernie Hudson, who's introduced last and whose role was significantly reduced when Eddie Murphy turned down the chance to play Winston. Where is the representation? The woman who answers the phone, or the woman who desperately needs the Ghostbusters help?
Slimer is green, Gozer is female. The villain at the end ultimately is also a large white man, and they defeat him with the power of cooperation, collaboration. So that's where your representation is.
So they're allies, the Ghostbusters, is what you're saying. This is
they are.
They're striking out against the white patriarchy. Okay, gotcha.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, this. We can't stand for this. Not in a cultural melting pot like New York City, which is grand. And I mean, you know, that even continues into the next one where they literally ride the symbol of the melting pot to go defeat Vigo the Carpathian. It continues on. It's a theme that's built here and gets even strengthened by the second one 5 years later.
Thankfully, we only get one blowjob, ghost blowjob scene, though, in this franchise. So there's that, at least. That's a highlight, I guess, for Jake.
Also, Matrix has zero ghost blowjob scenes, which I think is a strike against it, because you literally have a scene where he is entranced by this woman in red who is an ethereal being, and nothing comes of that relationship.
Jake's still bitter. He's got
all right.
Got some sour grapes.
Listen, here's the thing. I don't want to add to it, but if anything, that's representation for the kink community.
That's true.
Because dressing up like a Revolutionary War soldier and getting head from a ghost is got to be a fetish for somebody out there. Dan Aykroyd, namely.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now it's time to turn the tables. Jake, are you ready to stick it to Robert Yanez Jr.?
Yes.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
What is the Matrix? It's a simulated reality. That took 2 seconds to explain. The marketing was smart. They kind of built up the mystery about what it was, but it's relatively simple plot and straightforward. And a lot of the dialogue and some of the themes they mishmash into the movie really kind of makes it far more heady than it maybe that it earns, because other virtual reality movies were able to do it a little bit more streamlined, where they could explain, like, this is fake, this is real. Other movies kind of took this whole premise and even expanded on it to multiple different levels. We talked about Cronenberg earlier in this movie. Existenz is a movie that also plays with reality, different identity, like people going ascending to different levels of knowing what's going on in the reality around them, and then you find out that there's much more going on than you realized. Other movies, like, there's others that I can mention, but I'm running out of time. And then also, I mean, let's see. You get at me with diversity and... Actually, I'm not going to go down that route.
You're like, no, please don't. Can I respond to the virtual reality
thing? Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
The Matrix is the world has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. Again, it's about control. And I would argue the virtual reality part of it is a metaphor for the white male patriarchy and all these other societal limitations that the world puts on us.
All right, Jake, you're out of time for questions. You are out of time for answers there, Robert. So we are now down to closing arguments. This goes back to a uninterrupted format. You get 60 seconds this time, so you're 30 seconds less than what you had all the previous rounds. You get 60 seconds to make your direct appeal to our jury box, which is our audience. It is the Binge Lords. They are the jury. You have to make your appeal to Film Twitter and why should they vote for your movie and not the other guys? Jake, are you ready? You got 1 minute, sir.
All set. All right,
3, 2, 1, go.
Ultimately, what this comes down to is two trendsetters and which one has the most lasting impact. Strangely enough, we're getting sequels to both of these movies this year, which is an interesting coincidence. But, you know, which one has people kept coming back to over and over again to try to get inspiration for something that they're working on? It's Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters will inspire you. Ghostbusters will uplift you. It's perfectly fine for a wide breadth of audiences that are coming in. Young and old alike can appreciate the comedy, the special effects, which have really held up over time, pre-digital age. It's a mesmerizing 2 hours that really starts at the top with some great mystery, and yes, has some great action, because these men don't walk down from the second story to the ground floor. They slide down the pole and they drive the car really fast and they climb the stairs. They, you know, that's a big challenge at the end when they're trudging up those stairs.
All right, time. All right, Robert.
How many times have you been like, I can't climb these stairs? And then you're like, no, you can.
It's relatable.
With a nuclear accelerator. Unlicensed nuclear accelerator on their back.
They didn't have the benefit of blowing up an elevator, and there is no spoon with the door flipping towards through the front lobby, and then magically they're on the roof. No, my guys earned the roof.
All right, Robert, are you ready?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
All right, so are we going to go with the movie where middle-aged 30-something men are climbing stairs? Is this our cinematic milestone that we want to preserve for all time? Or the movie that questions...
If it's Rocky, yes.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's a fair point. Sore subject. I would argue that The Matrix tackles headier themes, but in a way that challenges audiences, but still provides all the spectacle, Oscar-winning visual effects. It distills all these different themes of science, religion, philosophy, anime influences, film noir influences, Western influences in this beautiful package. And yes, has it been parodied to death? Of course, but it sustained all of that. And it deserves to be in the vault with other 90s classics like Terminator 2, Jurassic Park. Plus, from a representation standpoint, since we touched on that earlier, this might be the only chance to get two transgender directors into the vault. And I think we need to take it. What is The Matrix? It's a movie that deserves to be saved for all time.
Well, right down to the wire, but he got it in at the last second. Robert. Okay. Now for representation, the last line of Ghostbusters is Ernie Hudson. I'll just put that out there.
Ernie Hudson.
He gets
respect
the final,
on Ernie Hudson.
Respect on Ernie. He gets final word just like you did, Robert. So there we go. Jake, you had something?
No, I guess I also wish The Matrix ended with a crowd of people cheering for Neo as he gets out of the phone booth.
But it ends with him liberating the human race. So, I mean, you have that.
Not according to the sequels. I wish.
Well, are we litigating the sequels? Because then we can bring in the Ghostbusters legacy and stuff. If we're
going to
go there.
That's what I was going to say. That I wish that The Matrix just ended. I don't care about the crowd. I don't care about Rage Against the Machine. I just wish that when he flies off and Superman's his way out of the movie, that they never made another one. And it would have been wonderful. So this is delicious. This is some wonderful stuff.
It's like, I'm off to make John Wick films. Goodbye.
But that's neither here nor there. Now it's come down to this. It's come down to Ghostbusters versus The Matrix. You will decide. We have had... first cut, we have had our last movie standing debate. It is all coming down now to final cut, which is for you, the audience. Again, the exclusive place to vote online is twitter.com/bingemovies. Get on the poll, vote for it. You can decide there. As far as our competitors go, Robert, we'll start with you. Where can the good, fine folks find you for more of your hot, hot takes about Dan Aykroyd?
I don't know how anti-Aykroyd became a thing this episode, but there we have it. That's now my new brand. So you can find the Crooked Table Productions podcasts over at crookedtable.com, where we have franchise detours launching soon. So we're going to be talking about the Child's Play franchise, which has been a lot of fun delving into that wild ride. Speaking of franchises with an insane legacy,
yes.
That one is like three movie series kind of mashed together. But you can find all details on that show and other podcasts at crookedtable.com, on Twitter and Instagram at crookedtable.
Jake, where can the good fine folks find you? What's the good work of the lore that you're doing out there in Hollyweird, California?
You can find me on Twitter at JT Hummus. You can also find my directorial debut feature film Shedding on iTunes and Amazon and other places where you purchase video on demand. It's available now.
Awesome. 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 Well, I thank you guys both for being here. There was a lot of ribbing on the square, so to speak. Robert, of course, I was just joking, just busting your chops a little bit for the sake of levity and entertainment for the binge lords at home. And of course, I am biased, but again, I don't get to vote. Our audience votes. Our audience decides. Binge lords, you got two of the biggest movies of their respective decade doing battle against each other, and only you get to decide which movie goes into the vault. If you're listening to this and you've never voted before, it's time. Vote or die! We have now seen the consequences of not voting. So many people reached out and said, I can't believe Rocky's been eliminated. But I ask you the question, Binge Lord, did you vote? If you didn't vote, you don't get the right to complain. But you do. You have the power. This is in your hands. Do you want The Matrix or do you want Ghostbusters? Only you can decide, because there can be only one. And you are the ones who have the power to save which movie most worthy of preservation for all time, even beyond the end times. So until next time, binge on. You got some cat activity.
She's complaining. You can cut that right. out.
No, it's all right.